Okay, we're back. It's Mina Murray's journal. Mina Murray. What a great alliterative name that is. 8th of August. Lucy was very restless all night, and I too could not sleep. The storm was fearful, and as it boomed loudly among the chimney pots, it made me shudder. When a sharp puff came, it seemed to be like a distant gun. Strangely enough, Lucy did not wake, but she got up twice and dressed herself. Fortunately, each time I awoke in time. Or to put it a different way, fortunately, each time I awoke in time and managed to undress her without waking her, and got her back to bed. It is a very strange thing, this sleepwalking, for as soon as her will is thwarted in any physical way, her intention, if there be any, disappears, and she yields herself almost exactly to the routine of her life. Early in the morning we both got up and went down to the harbour to see if anything had happened in the night. There were very few people about, and, though the sun was bright and the air clear and fresh, the big, grim-looking waves that seemed dark themselves because the foam that topped them was like snow, forced themselves in through the mouth of the harbour, like a bullying man going through a crowd. I'll work on that. I can't quite visualise it, but there we are. Somehow I felt glad that Jonathan was not on the sea last night, but on land. But, oh, is he on land? Or sea? Where is he now, and how? I'm getting fearfully anxious about him. If I only knew what to do, and could do anything. 10th of August. I'm going to remove one of my headphones. I don't usually wear headphones, but the funeral of the poor sea captain today was most touching. Every boat in the harbour seemed to be there, and the coffin was carried by captains all the way from Tate Hill Pier up to the churchyard. Lucy came with me, and we went early to our old seat, whilst the cortege of boats went up the river to the viaduct and came down again. Well, what a lovely little excursion that must have been. We had a lovely view and saw the procession nearly all the way. Well done. The poor fellow was laid to rest near our seat. Not doing very well with our seat, near our seat, near our seat, so that we stood on it when the time came and saw everything. Poor Lucy seemed much upset. This is going so well. She was restless and uneasy all the time, and I cannot but think that her dreaming at night is telling on her. She's quite odd in one thing. She will not admit to me that there is any cause for restlessness, or if there be, she does not understand it herself. There is an additional cause in that poor Mr. Swales. There is an additional cause in that poor Mr. Swales was found dead this morning on our seat, his neck being broken. I like this bit, sort of casually tossed in as a sort of, old Swalesy, neck broken. But like I say, you know, I found an old sort of used milk, empty milk carton on the doorstep this morning. Yeah, he was on our seat. Old Swalesy, neck broken. He had evidently, as the doctor said, fallen back in the seat in some sort of fright due to an empty milk carton, for there was a look of fear and horror on his face that the men said made them shudder. Poor dear old man. Lucy is so sweet and sensitive that she feels influences more acutely than other people do. Just now she was quite upset by a little thing which I did not much heed, though I am myself very fond of animals. One of the men who came up here often to look for the boats was followed by his dog. The dog is always with him. They are both quiet persons, and I never saw the man angry, nor heard the dog bark. During the service, the dog would not come to its master, who was on the other seat with us. But kept a few yards off, barking and howling. Its master spoke to it gently, and then harshly, and then angrily, but it would neither come nor cease to make a noise. It was in a fury, with its eyes savage, and all its hair bristling out like a cat's tail, when Puss is on the warpath. Finally, the man too got angry and jumped down and kicked the dog, and then took it by the scruff of the neck and half dragged and half threw it on the tombstone on which the seat is fixed. The moment it touched the stone, the poor thing began to tremble. It did not try to get away, but crouched down, quivering and cowering, and was in such a pitiable state of terror that I tried, though without effect, to comfort it. Lucy was full of pity too, but she did not attempt to touch the dog, but looked at it in an agonized sort of way. I greatly fear that she is of too supersensitive a nature to go through the world without trouble. She will be dreaming of this tonight, I'm sure. The whole agglomeration of things, yes. The ship steered into port by a dead man. His attitude, oh, he's got a terrible, tied to the wheel with a crucifix and beads. The touching funeral. The dog, now furious and now in terror, will all afford material for her dreams. And that milk carton, Sydney Carton. I think it will be best for her to go to bed, tired out physically, so I shall take her for a long walk by the cliffs to Robin Hood's Bay and back. She ought not to have much inclination for sleepwalking then. I shouldn't think so. It does sound like a long way. Well, shall we move on to Chapter 8? We might as well. Chapter 8. More Mina Murray's Journal. Same day, 11 o'clock p.m. Oh, but I am tired. If it were not that I had made my diary a duty, I should not open it tonight. We had a lovely walk. Lucy, after a while, was in gay spirits, owing, I think, to some dear cows who came nosing towards us in a field close to the lighthouse and frightened the wits out of us. I believe we forgot everything except, of course, personal fear, and it seemed to wipe the slate clean and give us a fresh start. We had a capital severe tea at Robin Hood's Bay, in a sweet little old-fashioned inn, with a bow window right over the seaweed-covered rocks of the Strand. I believe we should have shocked the new woman with our appetites. Men are more tolerant, bless them. Then we walked home with some, or rather many, stoppages to rest, and with our hearts full of constant dread of wild bulls. Yeah, Lucy was really tired, and we intended to creep off to bed as soon as we could. The young curate came in, however, and Mrs. Westenra asked him to stay for supper. Lucy and I had both a fight for it with the dusty miller. I know it was a hard fight on my part, and I'm quite heroic. I think that some day the bishops must get together and see about breeding up a new class of curates who don't take supper, no matter how hard they may be pressed to, and who will know when girls are tired. The dusty miller. Yeah, I'm not really familiar with that. Answers on a postcard, please. Anybody? Lucy is asleep and breathing softly. She has more colour in her cheeks than usual, but I can't see her face, and looks oh so sweet. If Mr. Homewood fell in love with her, seeing her only in the drawing-room, I wonder what he would say if he saw her now. Some of the new women writers will some day start an idea that men and women should be allowed to see each other asleep before proposing or accepting. But I suppose the new woman won't condescend in future to accept. She will do the proposing herself, and a nice job she will make of it too. There's some consolation in that. I'm so happy tonight because dear Lucy seems better. I really believe she has turned the corner, and that we are over her troubles with dreaming. Yeah, I'm sure you are. I should be quite happy if only I knew if Jonathan, God bless and keep him. I should be quite happy if I only knew if Jonathan, God bless and keep him. 11th of August. Diary again. Diary intolerant. No sleep now, so I may as well write. I'm too agitated to sleep. We have had such an adventure, such an agonizing experience. I fell asleep as soon as I had closed my diary. Suddenly I became broad awake and sat up with a horrible sense of fear upon me, and of some feeling of emptiness around me. The room was dark, so I could not see Lucy's bed. I stole across and felt for her. The bed was empty. I lit a match and found that she was not in the room. So I enjoyed a Lambert and Butler, stubbed it out in the pot plant next to her bed. The door was shut but not locked as I had left it. I feared to wake her mother, who has been more than usually ill lately, so threw on some clothes and got ready to look for her. As I was leaving the room, it struck me that the clothes she wore might give me some clue to her dreaming intention. Dressing gown would meet house, dress outside. Thanks, Sherlock. Dressing gown and dress were both in their places. Thank God, I said to myself, she cannot be far, as she is only in her nightdress. Yes, Victorian mores and moral sensibilities prevented you straying more than 3 yards wearing a nightdress. 3 yards from your bed. I ran downstairs and looked in the sitting room. Not there. Then I looked in all the other rooms of the house with an ever-growing fear chilling my heart. Finally, I came to the hall door and found it open. It was not wide open, but the catch of the lock had not caught. The people of the house are careful—the servants, that is—are presumably, are careful to lock the door every night, so I feared that Lucy must have got out as she was. There was no time to think of what might happen. A vague, overmastering fear obscured all details. I took a big heavy shawl and ran out. The clock was striking one as I was in the crescent, and there was not a soul in sight. I ran along the north terrace, but could see no sign of the white figure which I expected. At the edge of the west cliff above the pier, let's try that again, at the edge of the west cliff above the pier, I looked across the harbour to the east cliff, in the hope, or fear, I don't know which, of seeing Lucy in our favourite seat. There was a bright full moon, with heavy black driving clouds which threw the whole scene into a fleeting diorama of light and shade as they sailed across. For a moment, fleeting diorama of light. For a moment or two I could see nothing, as the shadow of a cloud obscured St. Mary's Church and all around it. Then, as the cloud passed, I could see the ruins of the abbey coming into view, and as the edge of a narrow band of light, as sharp as a sword cut, moved along, the church and churchyard became gradually visible. Whatever my expectation was, it was not disappointed, for there, on our favourite seat, the silver light of the moon struck a half-reclining figure, snowy white. The coming of the cloud was too quick for me to see much, for shadow shut down on light almost immediately. But it seemed to me as though something dark stood behind the seat, where the white figure shone. For in the most dramatic bit, I've totally cocked up. But it seemed to me as though something dark stood behind the seat where the white figure shone, or shone, as we Americans have it, and bent over it. What it was, whether man or beast, I could not tell. I did not wait to catch another glance, but flew down the steep steps to the pier and along by the fish market to the bridge, which was the only way to reach the east cliff. The town seemed as dead, for not a soul did I see. I rejoiced that it was so, for I wanted no witness of poor Lucy's condition. The time and distance seemed endless, and my knees trembled, and my breath became laboured as I toiled up the endless steps to the abbey. I must have gone fast, and yet it seemed to me as if my feet were weighted with lead, and as though every joint in my body were rusty. It was quite exciting, I suppose. When I got almost to the top, I could see the seat and the white figure, for I was now close enough to distinguish it even through the spells of shadow. There was undoubtedly something long and black, bending over the half-reclining white figure. I called in fright, "Lucy! Lucy!" And something raised a head. And from where I was, I could see a white face and red, gleaming eyes. Lucy did not answer, and I ran on to the entrance of the churchyard. As I entered, the church was between me and the seat, and for a minute or so I lost sight of her. When I came in view again, the cloud had passed, and the moonlight struck so brilliantly that I could see Lucy half reclining, with her head lying over the back of the seat. She was quite alone, and there was not a sign of any living thing about. When I bent over her, I could see that she was still asleep. Her lips were parted, and she was breathing, not softly as usual with her, but in long, heavy gasps, as though striving to get her lungs full at every breath. As I came close, she put up her hand in her sleep and pulled the collar of her nightdress close around her, as though she felt the cold. I flung the warm shawl over her and drew the edges tight around her neck, for I dreaded lest she should get some deadly chill from the night air, unclad as she was. I feared to wake her all at once, so, in order to have my hands free to help her, I fastened the shawl at her throat with a big safety pin. Something comedic about that, but I fastened the shawl with a big safety pin. Yeah, good. But I must have been clumsy in my anxiety and pinched or pricked her with it, for by and by, when her breathing became quieter, she put her hand to her throat again and moaned. When I had her carefully wrapped up, I put my shoes on her feet and then began very gently to wake her. I put my shoes on her feet. Ah, yes, I see. At first she did not respond, but gradually she became more and more uneasy in her sleep, moaning and sighing occasionally. At last, as time was passing fast, and for many other reasons, I wished to get her home at once. At last, as time was passing fast, and for many other reasons, I wished to get her home at once. I shook her forcibly, till finally she opened her eyes and awoke. She did not seem surprised to see me, as, of course, she did not realise all at once where she was. Lucy always wakes prettily, as do I, dear listener, as do I. And even at such a time, when her body must have been chilled with cold and her mind somewhat appalled at waking unclad in a churchyard at night, she did not lose her grace. She trembled a little and clung to me. When I told her to come at once with me home, she rose without a word, with the obedience of a child. As we passed along, the gravel hurt my feet, and Lucy noticed me wince. She stopped and wanted to insist upon my taking my shoes, but I would not. However, when we got to the pathway outside the churchyard, where there was a puddle of water remaining from the storm, I daubed my feet with mud, using each foot in turn on the other, so that as we went home, no one, in case we should meet anyone, should notice my bare feet. Ah, yes, what a singular... a singular affront to the morals and mores of the Victorian age. Fortune favoured us, and we got home without meeting a soul to mock my unclad, naked feet. Once we saw a man who seemed not quite sober passing along a street in front of us, but we hid in a door till he had disappeared up an opening such as there are here, steep little closes, or wynds, as they call them in Scotland. Winds, wynds, wynds. My heart beat so loud all the time, sometimes I thought I should faint. I was filled with anxiety about Lucy, not only for her health, lest she should suffer from the exposure, but for her reputation, in case the story should get wind or wind. When we got in and had washed our feet, and had said a prayer of thankfulness together that nobody had spotted them naked, our feet, I tucked her into bed. Before falling asleep, she asked, even implored, for a mini Toblerone. Me not to say a word to anyone, even her mother, about her sleepwalking adventure. Nothing about a Toblerone. I added that. I hesitated at first to promise, but on thinking of the state of her mother's health, and how the knowledge of such a thing would fret her, good word, and think, too, of how such a story might become distorted, nay, infallibly would, in case it should leak out, I thought it wiser to do so. I hope I did right. I have locked the door, and the key is tied to my wrist, so perhaps I shall not be again disturbed. Lucy is sleeping soundly. The reflex of the dawn is high and far over the sea. The reflex of the dawn is high and far over the sea. What a very nice sentence, and clicking on reflex. I don't want to download the Oxford English Dictionary. But yet it is doing it. Thank you, Kindle desktop app for Mac 4. The reflex. Well, here it is. Yes, Oxford. I thought I was looking at reflex there, but clearly not. Same day, noon. That's a diary entry, and there's a dog barking in the night time, except it's the daytime. All goes well. Lucy slept till I woke her and seemed not to have even changed her side. Yes, because she was playing for Whitby Academicals, and I was thinking of transferring to Robin Hood's Bay Rovers, and seemed not to have even changed her side, or her strip. The adventure of the night does not seem to have harmed her. On the contrary, it has benefited her, for she looks better this morning than she has done for weeks. I was sorry to notice that my clumsiness with the big safety pin hurt her. Indeed, it might have been serious, for the skin of her throat was pierced. I must have pinched up a piece of loose skin. How dare you? I don't have loose skin. And have transfixed it, for there are two little red points like pinpricks. And on the band of her nightdress was a drop of blood. Well, you've got to be a bit more bloody careful with this wafting around these safety pins, haven't you? I know they're useful, I know it's a new invention, but, you know, just stop whacking them in where you think there's a problem, because you will be sued, you will be taken to court. When I apologised and was concerned about it, go on, she laughed and petted me and said she did not even feel it. Fortunately, it cannot leave a scar, as it is so tiny. Good. Good, good, good. Just be careful with that, you know, safety pin. Same day, night. We passed a happy day. The air was clear and the sun bright, and there was a cool breeze. We took our lunch to Mulgrave Woods, Mrs. Westenra driving by the road, and Lucy and I walking by the cliff path, and joining her at the gate. I felt a little sad myself, for I could not but feel how absolutely happy it would have been had Jonathan been with me. Okay, yeah, so Mina Murray is affianced, engaged, whatever, to Jonathan, who's been sucked out by the Count in Transylvania. But there, I must only be patient. In the evening we strolled in the Casino Terrace and heard some good music by Soffer, Spohr and Mackenzie. Spohr and Mackenzie. I wonder who they are. If I could be bothered, I'd look them up on the Tinterweb. On Tinterweb. Aye. And went to bed early. Lucy seems more restful than she has been for some time. Lucy seems more restful than she has been for some time, and fell asleep at once. I shall lock the door and secure the key the same as before, though I do not expect any trouble tonight. Ah, that's good. That's good. 12th of August. August. My expectations were wrong, for twice during the night I was wakened by Lucy trying to get out. She seemed, even in her sleep, to be a little impatient at finding the door shut, and went back to bed under a sort of protest. Door shut. I woke with the dawn, and heard the birds chirping outside of the window. The reflex of the dawn. Lucy woke too, and I was glad to see was even better than on the previous morning. All her old gaiety of manner seemed to have come back, and she came and snuggled in beside me, and told me all about Arthur. Or was it Martha? I told her how anxious I was about Jonathan, and then she tried to comfort me. Well, she succeeded somewhat, for though sympathy can't alter facts, it can make them more bearable. 13th of August, lucky for some. Another quiet day. And to bed, with the key on my wrist as before. I think I'm going to start doing that. Can't be too careful. Again, I awoke in the night and found Lucy sitting up in bed. Still asleep, pointing to the window. I got up quietly and, pulling aside the blind, looked out. Well, what were they doing there? It was brilliant moonlight, and the soft effect of the light over the sea and sky merged together in one great silent mystery. It was beautiful beyond words. And the da-da-da merged together in great silence was beautiful beyond words. Between me and the moonlight flitted a great bat, coming and going in great whirling circles. How creepy. Once or twice it came quite close, but was, I suppose, frightened at seeing me, and flitted away across the harbour towards the abbey. Flitted away across the harbour towards the abbey. When I came back from the window, Lucy had lain down again and was sleeping peacefully. She did not stir again all night. Okay, well, yeah. Let's move on then to the 14th of August. She's a boring diarist, a boring chronicler of her own times. It's a bit one, I want to know more about what was, you know, Spohr and Mackintosh or whatever their names were. And, you know, whether there were any organ grinders in the streets. 14th of August. On the East Cliff. On the East Cliff, reading and writing all day. Good for you. Lucy seems to have become as much in love with the spot as I am, and it is hard to get her away from it when it is time to come home for lunch, or tea, or dinner, or one of the many intermediate snack moments when we have to go back for a Tunnock's caramel wafer, or a fudge doughnut. This afternoon she made a funny remark. Thank God for that. We were getting a bit... The well was dry. We were coming home for dinner, and had come to the top of the steps up from the West Pier, and stopped to look at the view, as we generally do. They loved a view, the old Victorians. We just photograph it now on our iPhone or Android. The setting sun, low down in the sky, was just dropping behind Kettleness. 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 The red light was thrown over on the East Cliff and the Old Abbey, and seemed to bathe everything in a beautiful rosy glow. We were silent for a while, and suddenly Lucy murmured, as if to herself, "His red eyes again. They are just the same." It was such an odd expression, coming apropos of nothing, that it quite startled me. Good expression, that, coming apropos of nothing. I slewed round a little so as to see Lucy well, without seeming to stare at her, and saw that she was in a half-dreamy state, with an odd look on her face that I could not quite make out, so I said nothing, but followed her eyes. She appeared to be looking over at our own seat, whereon was a dark figure seated alone. I was quite a little startled myself, for it seemed for an instant as if the stranger had great eyes like burning flames. But a second look dispelled the illusion. The red sunlight was shining on the windows of St. Mary's Church, behind our seat. And as the sun dipped, there was just sufficient change in the reflection. No, in the refraction, to make it appear as if the light moved. I called Lucy's attention to the peculiar effect, and she became herself with a start. But she looked sad all the same. It may have been that she was thinking of that terrible night up there. We never refer to it, so I said nothing, and we went home to dinner. Lucy had a headache and went early to bed. I saw her asleep and went out for a little stroll myself. I walked along the cliffs to the westward and was full of sweet sadness, for I was thinking of Jonathan. When coming home, it was then bright moonlight, so bright that though the front part of our... So bright that though the front of our part of the crescent was in shadow, everything could be well seen. I threw a glance up at our window and saw Lucy's head leaning out. I opened my handkerchief and waved it. She did not notice or make any movement whatever. Just then the moonlight crept round an angle of the building and the light fell on the window. There distinctly was Lucy, with her head lying up against the side of the windowsill and her eyes shut. She was fast asleep, and by her, seated on the windowsill, was something that looked like a good-sized bird. It was a Bernard Matthews butterball turkey, 20-pounder, with giblets. No, it wasn't. I was afraid she might get a chill, so I ran upstairs, but as I came into the room, she was moving back to her bed, fast asleep and breathing heavily. She was holding her hand to her throat as though to protect it from cold. I did not wake her, but tucked her up warmly, safety pinning a warm fox stole to her throat with three stout safety pins. I hope I did no harm. I have taken care that the door is locked and the window securely fastened. Fit the rest. Fit the best. Fit. Oh, for goodness sake, I can't even do a quick double glazing gag without cocking it up. Fit the best. Fit. Everest. She looks so sweet as she sleeps, but she is paler than is her wont, and there is a drawn, haggard look under her eyes which I do not like. Maybe it's Maybelline. I fear she was fretting about something. I wish I could find out what it is. Online gambling debts, perhaps. 15th of August. Rose later than usual. She does the bins on a Wednesday morning, and that means I've got to put them out. Oh, Rose. Lucy was languid and tired, and slept on after we had been called. We had a happy surprise at breakfast. Ah, that's what you call it.
Happy surprise, sir?
No, thank you. Arthur's father is better.
What?
Arthur's father is better, and wants the marriage to come off soon.
Happy surprise at breakfast?
Lucy is full of quiet joy, and her mother is glad and sorry at once.
So I have no idea what's happening here.
Arthur's father is better. Oh, Arthur Homewood. And wants the marriage to come off soon. Lucy is full of quiet joy, and her mother is glad. Sorry, once later on in the day, she told me the cause. She is grieved to lose Lucy as her very own. But she is rejoiced that she is soon to have someone to protect her. Well, Lucy does seem to be a bit of a flake. Poor, dear, sweet lady. She confided to me that she has got her death warrant. She has not told Lucy and made me promise secrecy. Her doctor told her that within a few months at most she must die, for her heart is weakening. You always think those sort of prognoses, I always think they're not very helpful to the remaining span of the hearer. Yes, I'm afraid you're going to die in a fortnight, you're going to leave your fine pearl earrings out on the side table and never see them again. I work for the NHS, I'm an honest GP, and, yes, dead in a fortnight, earrings gone the next morning. At any time, even now, a sudden shock would be almost sure to kill her. That's very unfortunate. Sudden shock. Well, luckily, all is rosy and placid in Whitby at the moment. Were we wise to keep from her the affair of the dreadful night of Lucy's sleepwalking? Okay, well, that was almost like I got some sort of brain ellipsis. What's a brain ellipsis? We were wise to keep from her the affair of the dreadful night of Lucy's sleepwalking. You were indeed. She could have been 6 foot under with the rest of them. 17th of August, no diary for 2 whole days. I have not had the heart to write. Some sort of shadowy pall seems to be coming over our happiness. No news from Jonathan, and Lucy seems to be growing weaker whilst her mother's hours are numbering to a close. Well, that's a jolly turnaround, isn't it? I do not understand Lucy's fading away as she is doing. I do not understand Lucy's fading away as she is doing. It's a funny sentence. She eats well and sleeps well and enjoys the fresh air, but all the time the roses in her cheeks are fading and she gets weaker and more languid day by day. At night I hear her gasping as if for air. I keep the key of our door always fastened to my wrist at night, but she gets up and walks about the room and sits at the open window. Last night I found her leaning out when I woke up, and when I tried to wake her, I could not. She was in a faint. When I managed to restore her, she was weak as water and cried silently between long, painful struggles for breath. Weak as water is a good phrase, isn't it? When I asked her how she came to be at the window, she shook her head and turned away. I trust her feeling ill may not be from that unlucky prick of the safety pin. You unlucky prick. I looked at her throat just now. How childish I am. I looked at her throat just now as she lay asleep, and the tiny wounds seem not to have healed. They are still open, and if anything, larger than before, and the edges of them are faintly white. How unpleasant. They are like little white dots with red centres. Unless they heal within a day or two, I shall insist on the doctor seeing about them. Well, here's a letter. Here's a letter from a solicitor in Whitby to a company in London. Letter, Samuel F. Billington and Son, Solicitors, Whitby. I don't come from Whitby, as you can tell, but I'm a blow-in. To Messrs. Carter, Patterson and Co., London, 17th of August. Dear Sirs, herewith please receive invoice of goods sent by Great Northern Railway. Same are to be delivered at Carfax near Purfleet, immediately on receipt at Goods Station, King's Cross. The house is at present empty, but enclosed. Please find keys, all of which are labelled. You will please deposit the boxes, 50 in number, which form the consignment, in the partially ruined building forming part of the house, and marked A on rough diagrams enclosed. Your agent will easily recognise the locality, as it is the ancient chapel of the mansion. The goods leave by the train at 9:30 tonight and will be due at King's Cross at 4:30 tomorrow afternoon. You couldn't do that today, could you? As our client wishes the delivery made as soon as possible, we shall be obliged by your having teams ready at King's Cross at the time named and forthwith conveying the goods to destination in order to obviate any delays possible through any routine requirements as to payment in your departments. We enclose cheque herewith for £10, receipt of which please acknowledge. Should the charge be less than this amount, you can return balance. If greater, we shall at once send cheque for difference on hearing from you. You are to leave the keys on coming away in the main hall of the house, where the proprietor may get them on his entering the house by means of his duplicate key. Pray do not take us as exceeding the bounds of business courtesy in pressing you in all ways to use the utmost expedition. We are, dear sirs, faithfully yours, Samuel F. Billington and Son. Well, good for them. And then it's followed by another letter, an epistolary volume, chapter, letter, Messrs. Carter Patterson and Company, London, to Messrs. Billington and Son, Whitby.
Yeah, right, 21st of August. Dear sirs, we beg to acknowledge £10 received and to return cheque of £1.17.09, amount of overplus, as shown in receipted account herewith. Goods are delivered in exact accordance with instructions and keys left in parcel in main hall. As directed, we are, dear sirs, yours respectfully, Pro Carter Patterson and Co. Oh, yes.
Moving on to Mina Murray's journal. Don't hurry a Murray. You can't hurry a Murray when it comes to diary entries. 18th of August. I'm happy today and right sitting on the seat in the churchyard. Lucy is ever so much better. Last night she slept well all night and did not disturb me once. Good. The roses seem coming back already to her cheeks, though she is still sadly pale and wan-looking. If she were in any way anemic, I could understand it, but she is not. She's in gay spirits and full of life and cheerfulness. All the morbid reticence seems to have passed from her. And she has just reminded me, as if I needed any reminding, of that night, and that it was here on this very seat I found her asleep. As she told me, she tapped playfully with the heel of her boot on the stone slab and said, "My poor little feet didn't make much noise then. I dare say poor old Mr. Swales would have told me that it was because I didn't want to wake up Geordie." As she was in such a communicative humour, I asked her if she had dreamed at all that night. Before she answered, that sweet puckered look came into her forehead, which Arthur, I call him Arthur from her habit, says he loves. And indeed I don't wonder that he does. Then she went on in a half-dreaming kind of way, as if trying to recall it to herself. "I didn't quite dream, but it all seemed to be real. I only wanted to be here in this spot. I don't know why, for I was afraid of something. I don't know what. I remember, though I suppose I was asleep, passing through the streets and over the bridge. A fish leaped as I went by. I would prefer a fish leapt as I went by, but it doesn't say that. It says a fish leaped as I went by. And I leaned over to look at it. And I heard a lot of dogs howling. The whole town seemed as if it must be full of dogs, all howling at once as I went up the steps. Then I had a vague memory of something long and dark with red eyes, just as we saw in the sunset, and something very sweet and very bitter all around me at once. And then I seemed sinking into deep green water, and there was a singing in my ears, as I have heard there is to drowning men, and then everything seemed passing away from me. My soul seemed to go out from my body and float about the air. I seem to remember that once the West Lighthouse was right under me. And then there was a sort of agonizing feeling as if I were in an earthquake. And I came back and found you shaking my body. I saw you do it before I felt you." Then she began to laugh. It seemed a little uncanny to me, and I listened to her breathlessly. I did not quite like it, and thought it better not to keep her mind on the subject, so we drifted on to another subject, and Lucy was like her old self again. "Tell me, Lucy, about Fuzzyfelt characters." "Fuzzyfelt?" Oh, yes, I love fuzzy felt. When we got home, the fresh breeze had braced her up, and her pale cheeks were really... If I could move this mouse, and her pale cheeks were really more rosy. Her mother rejoiced when she saw her, even though her days were numbered, and we all spent a very happy evening together, playing Yahtzee. 19th of August. Joy, 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 although not all joy. At last, news of Jonathan. The dear fellow has been ill. Understatement of the year. That is why he did not write. I'm not afraid to think it or say it, now that I know. Mr. Hawkins sent me on the letter and wrote himself oh so kindly. I'm to leave in the morning and go over to Jonathan and to help to nurse him, if necessary, and to bring him home. Mr. Hawkins says it would not be a bad thing if we were to be married out there. I have cried over the good sister's letter till I can feel it wet against my bosom, where it lies. It is of Jonathan, and must be near my heart, for he is in my heart. My journey is all mapped out and my luggage ready. I'm only taking one change of dress. Is that wise? Lucy will bring my trunk to London and keep it till I send for it. For it may be that... Oh, I must write no more. I must keep it to say to Jonathan, my husband. The letter that he has seen and touched must comfort me till we meet. I have to say, I've been reading the words, but I've not really been paying a great deal of attention. The sun's going down. I've been blathering on for a long time. It's a new method of recording. I've got the big words in front of me on a big screen. Usually I have a little Kindle, but it's quite nice to see the big words on a big screen. Whether it's made any difference, dear listener, I know not. We now have 9 or 10 regular listeners, which is gratifying. I believe that's what's called not going viral. But, you know, given my understanding of virology, I don't think it matters very much. Right, we'll leave it there, and we'll pick up again with Letter, Sister Agatha, Hospital of St. Joseph and St. Mary, Budapest, to Miss Wilhelmina Murray. Ah, that's where Mina comes from, of course. Wilhelmina, what an unattractive name that is, possibly the most unattractive name. Wilhelm. We will make Wilhelm sound a little bit more feminine. Wilhelmina. Sounds nice. Okay, and that's enough, Klaus Schwab. Let's leave it there. Thank you for listening. Bye.